So I get into this, I'd like for you to think about reading the news. Now this kind of ties into what James was saying. Mary's like, why are you reading the news before you go to bed? And it's true. And then if I can't sleep in the middle, I'm checking again what's my Twitter feed have, what's on the news. And then I can't go back to sleep either, you know. And then the first thing in the morning you check it, so there's no rest. So when you look at the news today, maybe just kind of make a mental list about the emotions you feel. What emotions do you feel? And I'm sorry, Rod and Violet, yes, you're sitting through the same sermon again that I gave in Reston, but Stephen helped me add some stuff to it. So maybe don't rest during the sermon. Don't go to sleep. You make me feel bad. Okay. Emotions. What emotions do you feel when you watch the news? Everything's dialed up today, isn't it? Everything's dialed up. Anger is rage, and disagreement brings hatred. There's no forgiveness. There's no forgiveness. There's no dialogue. There's only vengeance. So what emotions did you list? I mean, it makes me feel frustrated and angry. I feel depressed when I see what's happening to our beautiful nation. They're not good feelings. Did anybody list happiness as when you watch a clip, do you feel happy? If you do, you need to get some professional help, in my opinion. People are so unhappy today. People are unhappy with their happiness. If they're happy, they feel guilty about it, and so they want to protest that they're happy. It's a very sad state. And Satan and his demons are just stirring the cauldron. It's just, the fields are white for harvest for them. It's a perfect storm in many ways. So this afternoon, I would like to review some important principles about happiness from a strange place, I think, from the book of Ecclesiastes. And you think about the book of Ecclesiastes, it's sort of a depressing review of Solomon's life. When he's looking back, he doesn't sound like a very happy guy. But it's interesting that I think there are some keys hidden in there about finding true happiness. And so the title of this sermon is What Solomon Forgot About Being Happy. What Solomon Forgot About Being Happy. Now, to set the stage, if you remember, Solomon was King David's son. And David wanted to build a temple. He had a tremendous personal relationship with the God who became Jesus Christ, and yet he was not allowed to build a temple that he so desired to because he was a man of blood. And yet he made great preparations, laid the plans, brought in a lot of the materials. And there was intrigue in David's house because of his sins, and the transition even to Solomon coming to the throne was not a smooth one, if you remember the story. But when he was finally brought in, one of the final things David said to him in 1 Kings 2:1, he charged Solomon to be strong, to be courageous, to walk in the paths of the Lord, to read and follow what was written in the book of Moses, and to follow that law. So we're going to skip forward now. And if you remember, we'll touch a little bit on the magnificent blessings that Solomon received. If you remember as well, he was asked in a dream, what do you want? What do you desire? And he gave a very humble answer. And so the God of the Old Testament said, since you didn't ask for wealth or length of days, but you asked for wisdom, because Solomon said, how am I going to lead this great nation? Who am I to lead this great nation? So he had humility. And so because of that, he said, no, I'm going to give you wisdom. More wisdom than anybody has ever had, and wealth and length of days. And it's interesting, just a side note just popped in my head. I was in a meeting yesterday with a couple of business owners and a vice president, and it was about compensation and some things. And it's interesting, this young man gave a very wise and sort of humble answer that really set the stage for a very positive meeting, instead of being sort of arrogant and, yeah, you know, pay me a bunch of money. It was, it really changed the tone of the meeting, and as a result of that, he actually is going to be blessed for it. So attitude's a lot, so important. But anyway, that wasn't in my notes. That's a bonus, no charge. Ecclesiastes 1. The vanity of life, this heading says. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So he just jumps in a very positive way, looking back on his life. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rose. The wind goes toward the south and turns toward the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. So he's kind of saying, you know, these systems are in place and the way it was before, it's going to happen tomorrow. Verse 8, he says, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. And that which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. And in terms really of the character and human nature, the character of man, character of woman, human nature, there is nothing new. Of course, there have been a lot of new inventions since Solomon lived. Verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It's already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Now, that's kind of depressing, isn't it, actually? That's not a positive view of life, is it? From the richest, wisest person who had just lived a very long life and is looking back. I mean, is that how you and I want to feel, looking back on our lives? What a waste of time that was. Verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. What he's saying is that everything left me empty. Everything I had, everything I did, everything I was, everything I made didn't fill me. It left me empty. It was vanity. And the word kind of means it was like a breath. And I remember reading this kind of quip from an elderly person that said, I was born, I blinked, and it was over. You know, and the people in the front row over here and dad in the back knows what I mean. I'm getting to where I know a little better. It goes fast, way faster than we thought it would. And some of you young bucks don't understand that yet, but you will soon enough. It's interesting about knowledge increasing. I try and keep up on some things, not as much as AJ, but there are new apps coming out all the time on how to manage knowledge. I mean, you just can't kind of put things in a file cabinet somewhere. Now you've got to link them, and now they have these apps, little reverse link things, so that if you ever want to recall that knowledge because you've read 47 articles on it, you can pull it out and you never lose it. And so the app acts like your brain, sort of, rather than a filing cabinet. And so we have more knowledge today, you know, available to us than anybody's ever had with the internet and Google and searching. And has that increased our happiness? Are we happier? You know, there's interesting parallels in Solomon's quest for happiness and American life today, I think. America, as we go through and read some of these scriptures about what Solomon accomplished, we may think about America. American wealth, American life? Are we happy? Are we happy as a nation? And if it affects the nation, it affects the church. That's just the way it is. An anonymous suicide note from a college student concludes, "My fear of death and the unknown is far less terrifying than the prospect of unbearable frustration, futility, and the hopelessness of continued existence." And so the emptiness becomes so dark and horrible that death is better than life in the richest, freest nation that has ever existed. So we might also say what America forgot about being happy. And when we're unhappy, we try and cram things into the hole, into the emptiness, as Solomon did. Let's read a little bit about that. So you're not depressed by looking at that the whole time. I've put in some placeholders, and I actually took this picture when got a chance to go fishing with Larry and Mr. Doug Horchek. And this, they were way downstream. They left me fumbling with my hook. So I just sat here and took pictures. And as I told Mary happily, no marine life were damaged in the making of these pictures. But, the reason this imagery is here, because it was so peaceful. Wow, it was so peaceful. Think about the stress we're under, so much stress. It's not intended to be that way, as James said. We're intended to rejuvenate. Even on the Sabbath, it's kind of hard these days to really rejuvenate, especially when you have a sermon to give. That's not your problem, is it? I profaned the Sabbath this morning pretty heavily. All right, Ecclesiastes 2:1. through 11. And Solomon said, he said, "I said in my heart, come now, I'm going to test you with mirth." Let's do a scientific experiment. We're going to look for laughter. "Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? So I searched in my heart." Well, that wasn't so great. "So let's try something else. I would gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. And how to lay hold on folly, foolishness. I'll be foolish till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives." So, I'm an experiment. I'm going to try a little LSD or whatever it is. He was kind of like the kids in the 60s. But I'm going to be wise. It's okay because it's a scientific experiment. And he was wealthy, so he made works that were great. "I built myself houses multiple and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants, had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all times. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom remained with me because it was supernaturally granted." Verse 10, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure." In other words, he did not tell himself no about anything. It was all yes. Yeah, I'll try that. Yeah, I'll do that. No boundaries. "For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun." These beautiful homes, these pools, these vineyards, this great wealth, it was like a breath. It was like trying to hold the wind. It was nothing to me. There was no profit under the sun. something else that Solomon had was endless entertainment, as we do now. As we said earlier, he had male and female singers. And we have what? Probably thousands of channels where we can find things. And now, of course, America's slightly gone mad, not being able to go to entertainment things like we did in the past. We can have instant entertainment. This slide gets a little ahead of myself, but that's okay. You can read ahead. You're already thinking ahead of me because your brain goes way faster than I can talk. At least most of yours do. But the point is, entertainment is not fulfilling, is it? A song. He had the singers. And, you know, I love music. Mary and I love music. We love going to music events. We were supposed to go to 4 concerts this summer that for some reason got canceled. But, you know, even after that, it doesn't linger. Music was a big part of our lives. When we drove to the feast or to Ohio, our kids all sat in the back seat and sang songs, you know, with the cassettes. Ask your parents what a cassette is. And It filled us with joy and a feeling of happiness. But then it's over pretty quick. It's over pretty quick, isn't it? Immense wealth. And this is kind of the slide I got to a little bit before that. Let's read a little bit about Solomon's great wealth and think about our great wealth in this nation. 2 Chronicles 9:13-28 describes it. 2 Chronicles 9. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold, besides what the traveling merchants and traders brought. And all the kings of Arabia and the governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 shekels of hammered gold went into each shield. And it describes a lot of this. And he had an ivory throne, and he overlaid it with pure gold, had 6 steps with a footstool of gold, armrests on either side, and 2 lions behind them, beside them. So he can walk up 6 steps in all his pomp and circumstance, gold and silver everywhere, servants, wealth. And he sits down, and his heart is empty. Verse 20, all King Solomon's drinking vessels were gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Not one was silver, for this was accounted as nothing in the days of Solomon. Ah, get that silver out of here. We don't have any silver in our house. We only have gold. It's kind of like our house, now that I think of it. Or is it? I don't think it is like our house, actually. For the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came back bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and monkeys. So that in that last part, it's kind of like our house. So King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God put in his heart. So, I mean, if you can think about this in terms of human nature, if people come to you for advice, all the other kings, your peers are coming in. Please tell us what to do. I mean, doesn't that make you happy? Doesn't that make you feel fulfilled? Doesn't that make you feel good? Well, it didn't for Solomon, because he forgot what makes you happy. Solomon, in verse 25, had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And he reigned over all the other kings. He made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones, and he made cedar trees as abundant as the sycamores, which are in the lowland. So the whole nation benefited from the blessings from God to Solomon. There's an interesting thing here that somebody estimated that his net worth was over $2 trillion in today's dollars. You know, that he was... You know, if he was receiving 25 tons of gold a year for 39 years of his reign, that's like billions and billions of dollars, you know. So this is just unfathomable wealth. And it's real wealth, too. It's not in a stock certificate. Many of the richest people today, they have a lot of hard assets, but they've also got a lot of stuff that's paper. It's just paper. The wealth of the United States is astonishing. There is a private wealth ranking in 2018. The U.S. was number one at $60.7 trillion. $60.7 trillion of wealth in this nation. China was number two at $23.6 trillion. And if you look at this map, it's a little hard maybe to see, but it shows that the dark green is really the richest nations in the world. And you see, of course, Australia, some in Europe, most of it in the North American continent. This concentration of enormous wealth in some ways mimics what happened in Solomon's time for himself and for Jerusalem. Another thing that's a parallel is unlimited pleasure. In 1 Kings 11:3 says, Solomon had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And, you know, he said he didn't withhold anything from himself. But we'll see later on, there's a reason why they didn't bring him happiness. You know, Americans seek pleasure. There's nothing wrong with pleasure in the right context. But it doesn't bring happiness. It brings pleasure for a little bit. There's a difference. You know, Americans self-medicate with alcohol, drugs, and loveless sexual encounters. You can't really see this very well, but the top, this shows the leading causes of death around the world. I think this is from, be right back, 2017. It talks about, of course, high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of these have to do with lifestyle choices and some to do with poverty. But did you get down there, about 2.84 million people a year die because of alcohol abuse. Almost 3 million people. And so, you know, there's a lot of unhealthiness, as even in spite of our access to incredible wealth, endless entertainment, pleasures, people are medicating, self-medicating. And we can even self-medicate with things that are righteous if it's not done in moderation or for the right reasons. And, you know, really after people seek pleasure or they seek this or that, the other to fill the hole because they're unhappy, the first thought is, how can I score it again? You know, how can I score it again? None of these wonderful things, and even if they are wonderful, made Solomon happy. And none of the wonderful things we have make Americans happy. And if we have wonderful things, they're not going to make us happy, you and me. Where do we find true, lasting happiness? So now let's talk about the things that Solomon knew, but he forgot about lasting happiness. He missed out on them. He forgot to live them. Now first, I'm going to detour for a second and say, there is something in Ecclesiastes that Solomon got right. He got right. Ecclesiastes 3:22. This is a bit of an aside. He says, I perceive that nothing is better than a man or a woman should rejoice in his or her own works, for that is their heritage. Ecclesiastes 5:18 through 20. Here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, his or her life, meaning that, which God gives him, for it is his or her heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him the power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart, which is his or her work. And it's an interesting thing that's happening in this nation, that rather than people wanting to rejoice and enjoy what they've earned from their labors, they want to rejoice and enjoy what somebody else earned. And that will never bring fulfillment or happiness. One thing that is true, and I think I've talked about this in a message before, that part of happiness is having meaningful work, work with purpose, work where success is earned and serves others, and work that uses your own natural gifts and talents. And if you're not doing that kind of work, you need to change and find out how to do it, because that is a key component of happiness. And Solomon knew that, and he got that part right. Here's what he forgot. One, he forgot to have a lot of close friends. Solomon forgot to have a lot of close friends. I like this Zig Ziglar quote. If you go out looking for friends, you're going to find they're very scarce. If you go out to be a friend, you'll find them everywhere. If you go out looking for friends, you're going to find they're very scarce, but you go out and be a friend, you'll find them everywhere. You know, there's some clues that Solomon didn't have many friends that we'll touch on in a minute. Ecclesiastes 4:9. The value of a friend. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. And I know that's so true. It's been a blessing for Dad and I to work together for many years, because I was on my own practicing for quite a while. Well, Mary was helping me. But it is so true that two are better than one, and close friends are so important. And I, you know, it's funny, growing up in Southern California, I would say, John, I think you're maybe the only one in this area kind of left. And now John's a couple years older than me, so he didn't have anything to do with me when I was in elementary school. You know, he was way too cool for me. I did have and I do value and treasure our friendship very much, by the way. But I'm not going to talk about you anymore. So my best friend when I was little was named Brian Gray. And I mean, I probably told this story here before, but anyway, he and I were very close in a lot of different ways. You know, we got so close that we actually used to play Risk over the phone. So when we were socially isolating back in the day, we would play Risk over the phone. And we were socially isolated because our parents wouldn't let us get together and play. That's some of my fabulous humor. Anyway, so Dad and Mom got me a little lime green mini bike when I was maybe 10 or 12. And Brian's grandparents got him a Honda 50. So I had some envy problems there. But we would go in Southern California. They had what they call freeway homes, because they built, if you go there now, you see these giant freeways that run by what used to be the college. And it took them maybe two decades to finish all that. So they had homes that you could rent fairly cheaply. So a lot of people that worked for the church and college lived there, and Brian's parents did. Anyway, it was close to an arroyo that ran down, and that arroyo ran to the sea, and it had a culvert, concrete culvert in the center, but on either side would be trees. And so we'd sneak down there. It wasn't legal, but we'd ride, you know, we're in the city. It's not like Texas, not like the Lord's favorite republic where you can just do anything anywhere. So anyway, we would go down there and ride our little mini bikes all over, and he'd bring firecrackers back. You know, those things, now this is what, maybe 50 years later, are so dear to my heart. In fact, he wrote me the other day, and I was just so thrilled to hear from him, because I still feel so close. And I know if he were here, we would take up where we left off. I think Solomon had many admirers, but I don't think he had very many true friends. And here's why, and we'll read about this in a second. Well, I'll skip down to it and then come back and read it again. If you look in Ecclesiastes 7:28, he says, "One man among a thousand I have found. One man among a thousand I have found." And so he knew a lot of people, but I think this means, in the context of that, somebody that I knit my soul to, like David and Jonathan did, somebody that I'm so close to that we could, you know, hold each other up, somebody that we could just sit in the same room and we know what each other's thinking. I don't think he had that. I don't think Solomon had that. The second thing that Solomon forgot, the second thing he forgot was to love and be loved. Now, I couldn't bear to play a clip that I saw yesterday And it was the audio along with video of the recordings of people's telephone calls from the airplanes and the towers. And the last thing that everybody wanted to say was, I need to let you know how much I love you. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to ever tell you again. Please pick up. Please pick up. I love you. I'm going to miss you. Something's wrong with the plane. I'm stuck in this tower. You know, at the end of our lives, we know what's important. We know what's important. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 7:26. Solomon forgot to love and be loved. Ecclesiastes 7:26. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. Who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here is what I have found, said the preacher, said Solomon, about himself. Adding one thing to the other to find out the reason which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. I have all this wisdom, I don't understand it. I found one man among a thousand, but a woman among all those I have not found. I have never found a woman who I can love or who loves me. But I have 300 wives and 700 concubines, or the other way around, or whatever. 1,000. And that's tragic and sad. I had a client come in the other day and said, yeah, we've almost been married 50 years. And we've never even thought once of divorce. Thought of murder a few times, but never divorce. And, you know, for me in my life, many years ago, when I gave Mary a ride to the feast in my 68 GTO with two other students to the Squaw Valley, which I think they're going to change the name of now, I didn't know how blessed I would be to find someone who loves me enough to always want to make me a better person and who's stuck with me. So now the untold blessings of that are a relationship that's unbelievable, and children and grandchildren and things that I couldn't have imagined, you know, being so wet behind the ears and so immature all those years ago. So thank you, hon, for sticking with me. But Solomon never got to understand that or feel that or know that. He forgot. He forgot. The third thing that Solomon forgot is to obey God and Christ. Deuteronomy 17:14. I already mentioned how his feeble dad, at the end said, look, I'm telling you, walk in the proper paths. Go to Moses' writings. Read them, understand them. Let them guide you, and you will have great blessings. Obey. Have a relationship. And if he did go back in Deuteronomy, he would have understood the instructions to kings long before there was such a thing as a king in Israel. Deuteronomy 17:14. When you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. Seeing into the future, bending time, whatever it takes to know this was going to happen. One from among your brethren you shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. But he, this is the instruction to Solomon. Think about what we read about what Solomon did compared to these instructions. He shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. And it specifically said he brought horses up from Egypt. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. And then it says also, it shall be when he sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book from the one before the priests, the Levites, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of his law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand nor the left, that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children. Every one of those instructions Solomon disobeyed. And it was allowed, and in some ways he was probably blessed to become wealthy, but you know, there was tremendous problems. After he died, people were not happy with the taxes or having to work all the time to support this wealth. And they wanted change. And there became a revolt. And the kingdom split. So here's what happened. This is the most terrible tragedy of all. This heading in my Bible says, Solomon's heart turns from the Lord. 1 Kings 11:1. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you, and surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love, lust actually. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. David finished strong. David finished stronger than he started. Solomon faded. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. And so he tore the kingdom from him. If it can happen to Solomon, it can happen to you, and it can happen to me. Because life is busy and complicated, and sometimes it's easy to compromise, in this world especially, well, let's think about the things that Solomon forgot that bring true happiness then and now. One, he forgot to have lots of close friends. He forgot to love and be loved. And he forgot to obey God and Christ. Now see, the important thing, these are all internal, spiritual things. These things cannot be purchased with money. They're having to do with heart and mind and soul, and they're about connecting. Connecting with each other, connecting with God the Father and Jesus Christ. You know, it's interesting. Don't we think we're more connected than we have ever been? I mean, I was in a Zoom conference yesterday with people all over the place. Some in, well, a few days ago, even about the feast. People all over the country. We had a Zoom meeting. Aren't we more connected than we've ever been? It's interesting. There was a study that was done in 2017. But anyway, several studies have shown that teenagers and young adults who spend most of their time on these social media platforms report a higher rate of depression than those who spend least or less time. A 2017 study of over 500,000 8th through 12th graders found that the number exhibiting high levels of depressive symptoms increased by 33% between 2010 and 2015. In the same period, the suicide rate for girls in that age group increased by 65%. Smartphones were introduced in 2007, and by 2015, fully 92% of teens and young adults owned a smartphone. The rise in depressive symptoms correlates with smartphone adoption during that period. Even when matched year by year, observes the study's lead author, San Diego State University psychologist Jean Twenge. Digital interactions cannot replace human touch. digital interactions cannot replace human touch. Now, this is even more important to us today during these times of imposed isolation. We're fortunate here. I talk to people in California who are very depressed from the lockdowns. Some are lessening some, but it's been a long time. There's no doubt that the isolation and prohibition of human touch brought on by the coronavirus crisis has hurt people psychologically and emotionally. Here's an article from the CDC. Mental health, substance use, and suicidal ideation during COVID-19 pandemic. Summary. Communities have faced mental health challenges related to COVID-19, associated morbidity, mortality, and mitigation activities. More thinking about substance abuse. More thinking about suicide. More depressed, more anxious. People are facing giant challenges. Satan and his demons are having a field day. And leaders have a conundrum. Do I protect skin at the risk of damaging hearts and minds and souls? And of course, we should be smart and protect ourselves. I'm not saying we shouldn't. But we are now having unnatural interactions that are not healthy or helpful. And the reason to bring this up is that we need to understand what it takes to be happy, to be mentally healthy, and to not kid ourselves that we don't need these interactions. Matthew 10:28 says, "Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in Gehenna," or hell. We might say of this, let's take care that we don't protect our body and ruin our mental and spiritual and emotional health. We really have to work hard to connect during this time and to stay connected during this time. And as James said, there are so many distractions and so many stresses and so many drains on our time. And I know that's true of us. And I know we could do so much better. And I don't have the juice I had 10, 20 years ago. But nonetheless, maybe I could, as I sat by the stream and was thinking about it, many of the things that caused me so much stress and the grand scheme of things aren't that important. They're kind of urgent, you know, but not really that important. It seems from the sad tale of Solomon that he died an unhappy man. It seems tragic that Solomon died unhappy. It's tragic that most Americans are unhappy, or at least many. It's tragic. You know, 800,000 people commit suicide in the world each year. 800,000. It's the 10th leading cause of death in America. Taking one's own life. The tragedy of mental health problems. How can this be when we have so much? I mean, like Solomon, we have immense wealth. We have unlimited entertainment. We have access to pleasure. But that's all vanity. That's all wind. That's all a breath. Now look, we sort of know this, but I think, at least for me, I can get swept along. I don't know about you. I can get swept along. I can get very busy. I can get very distracted. My focus can wane. My energy can attenuate. You know, we shouldn't be surprised about what's happening around us. It's a result of an inexorable spiritual law set in place by a loving creator, a father, and his son. You know, the instructions to kings were for their own happiness, not to try and keep them from having nice things. You know, rage and hatred and vengeance are the devil's tools, and they're never going to bring fulfillment, but neither are things. neither our experiences, neither our pleasures. So what we see going on around us is proving what we know. Money, things, fleshly experiences never bring lasting happiness, only relationships. Only relationships. So we need to cultivate and nurture. You could culture them. Some of you are beyond being cultured. Cultivate and nurture your friendships. That's what I meant to say. And treasure and love your loved ones. And tell them you love them. And most importantly, render loving obedience to the God family with our whole being the best we can. You know, there was one long psychological study, and you get down to the end of it, and it said, well, here's the conclusion. Happiness is love. Period. And so as we obey the two great commandments, as we love God the Father and Jesus Christ with our whole soul, our whole mind, our whole being, we're going to be happy. As we have outgoing concern and love, sacrificial love, like John being late, and I would never think you would do anything else but try and pull a limb, and you would have been late to church if somehow it had to be that way. And that's outgoing concern and love for somebody else over self. And when we do those things, we are nourished. We're not empty. It doesn't empty us to give of ourselves. It actually fills us up. It's not like breathing out a breath we lose. It's actually taking in life. May you and I do the right things and thereby find true lasting happiness even as the world crumbles at our feet.